Mr. Chairman, I believe the first item up is citizens' communication. We're checking to see if there is any member of the public who would like to address the board. Ms. Alshire, would you like to address the board?
I'm second. Somebody before me.
Okay. Sure. Ms. Gaskin, would you like to come forward and address the board?
I'm only trying to ask a few questions if there are any of the second items for the
council. Oh, very good. So Sally Gaskin is indicates she'll speak if necessary during that item if there's any questions related to project-based vouchers. Second, citizen who signed up to speak is Ms. Alshire. I'm sorry, is Lupe will come to you during the next section.
I'm trying to get off the camera, that's why I moved away from that. Okay.
Ms. Alshire, if you'd come forward.
I'm just waiting for it to get quiet. There's been a lot of people getting up and wandering around while I chair. And my speaker that didn't work, which meant that it was turned off from the main instead of the speaker. And the laptop was organized so that I wouldn't appear on the actual video. And it was turned back on to face right at me. And four or five people have been walking around while I've been sharing, and that's very disheartening. It's disrespectful. It isn't being courteous or kind and treating other people with justice and love. It took me two hours to get over here on the bus. And when I got on the bus that was near the University of Texas, there were about 100 people on that bus where they're only supposed to be 50. During COVID. So I leave at 10 in the morning to get over here to take two buses. I only have 3 minutes. I request that I'm respected when I share in meetings and people sit down and be courteous and kind. That's all I have to share.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Alshire. Is there any other member of the public wishing to make comments today? If not, then the public comment period is now closed. Mr. Chairman, at your direction, Chair of the Citywide Advisory Board, come forward. So pleased that Lupe has accepted the responsibility and was elected to serve as the president of the Citywide Advisory Board. As you know, this group is comprised of the presidents and vice presidents of all our 18 PPRA properties, and they've selected Lupe to represent the interests of residents across all those properties. And I can't think of a better person. She's led at Santa Rita for so many years and has helped convene major conferences here in our city, and it's just a joyful and really kind and loving person. So it's so nice to see you. Please take a few minutes, and if there's anything by way of introduction that you'd like to say to the board, feel free to do so, but then you'll have about 3 minutes to offer your comments about the Citywide activities.
Thank you so much. My name is Lupe Garcia. I'm from Santa Rita. I've been there for about 2 years now, and I appreciate the invitation, and it's a great honor to be here. The meeting was called to order, the Citywide Board meeting minutes on Tuesday, February 8th, 2020, at 10 a.m. Meeting called to order at 10:05 a.m. by President Lupe Garcia. Presentation of practical laws providing the low-income housing and COVID-19 updates. CalPERS will no longer accept partial rent payments, mailing out of 30-day notices to those behind on their rent. According to the Congress and Lloyd Douglas office provided early voting information to residents. Dominic Foster with the Austin Urban League staff stated staff in the office once a week for appointments as the fellow office. They're also gearing up for a tech academy pending approval, and they also set up several warming stations. A HACA community development announcement. Levani Villegas chaired the interview selection process for the Citywide Board's Vice President. Robert Jackson said scholarships are now available on the HACA website. She announced that IDAS classes are virtual. Currently interviewing for a new IDAS coordinator. Creative action is at Santa Rita and now Santa Rita will have a theme and art program. Nancy Garcia announced summer youth program is for HACA students from the age of 14 to 17 years of age. Daniel Grease mentioned Rosewood Home Ownership presentation is February the 24th. Nancy Rowland provided workforce development and IDAS updates. Catherine Cradle stated the AP staff distributed water and well water notices and flyers to senior companies. Anthony Schumacher discussed updates on the new health program at Chalmers Court. New business. Maria Pozzolo of Chalmers Court is the new vice president for our citywide board. Barbara, remember Lulu Perros as Police CW Resident Council President. Property update. The Garcia Santa Rita provided property updates. The updates for our Santa Rita were as follows. Funds were donated for the winter storm coming up on that week on February the 3rd. Over 500 blankets, caps, gloves, and over $1,000 worth of food for all the residents that we needed to provide for. We included Selena, Chalmers, VTW, and Santa Rita. There were no other updates. The meeting was adjourned at 11:35 a.m. This is the end of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Garcia. Lupe, may I ask you, could you share with the board, we just had a major ice storm. Any concerns that you heard from residents? I know we did an awful lot of work through Austin Pathways, and you were very helpful with that. Any concerns or issues that remain out there that the board should know about?
Not this year. I believe that this year everything was very well organized, and we had a lot of the maintenance were on board. They were packing out flyers. I was making sure that the water was not running. The I did not hear anything that was negative or very positive there. So I really, really appreciate that, because this year we were so well informed of what we had to do. It didn't catch us by surprise this year, so we were prepared, very well prepared, and getting all the other properties prepared for it. So we didn't hear anything. I did not hear anything negative out there. Everything was very positive.
Commissioners, are there any questions for Ms. Garcia?
Not necessarily a question, but just a comment. Because of Ruby Garcia's seniors and disabled people at Chalmers East and South were able to acquire some gloves and caps from her sponsors. So thank you for that, Ruby, for sharing. She shares with a lot of our community there in East Austin, so that was very much appreciated.
There's a lot of people, and sharing with folks about the grocery store you set up last year during the ice storm, and it was very impressive. So thank you for your leadership, and I know this board looks forward to working with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I'm advised that several members of the board may need to depart as early as 1:30, so I set that out as a time issue for the board to keep in mind as we work through the board agenda. Mr. Chair, do you want to call out the consent item on the agenda?
Before I do that, let me give a quick update to the board. I promised them that in February I would give them what the narrow search process is so that we could know what your status is. I can share that the process is moving along very well. In the interest of time, I'll just basically say I think that the narrow board of governors should be able to extend an offer to a candidate before March 31st, and Mr. Gerber should be back to us thereafter. He may have to spend a week or 10 days just helping the person on the board, but I think that's a series of phone calls, maybe a meeting, being there present on the first day or two when that person takes over. But I feel by April 15th, if not sooner, that Mr. Gerber will return back to his full-time position with HACA, with no further obligations, encumbrances, leads, or debts, particularly themselves. So that is my report. And with that, I will proceed to, I'll entertain any questions anybody may have. With that, we'll go to the consent agenda. The first item on the consent agenda is the approval of the board minutes from the board meeting held on December 16th, 2021. Do you have any amendments, changes, suggestions to the board minutes? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the agenda as printed. There's a motion by Commissioner Beckenhall, seconded by Commissioner Apostolo. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go to item number two and ask Ms. Gloria Morgan to come up. She will be responsible for items two and three. And so, Ms. Morgan, the floor is yours.
Good afternoon, Commissioner. This is Gerber, staff, and guests. My name is Gloria Morgan. I'm the Vice President of Queen Capital, and I'm here to present resolution number 2734.
Can I ask you one to pull the mic closer to you because we cannot hear you? I don't think your mic is on.
Okay.
So the board will take up item number 3, which is the discussion possible action regarding resolution number 23735, approval and renewal of the contract for employee medical insurance.
Once again, good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests. My name is Gordon Morgan. I'm the Vice President of Human Capital, and I'm here to present Resolution 3537, which is the renewal of our contract for employee medical insurance. As part of our comprehensive compensation package, the House Authority of the City of Austin offers regulatory county code, medical coverage. Coverage is currently provided through United Healthcare under the exclusive provider organization. Under the current plan, they will have the ability to be able to use the United Healthcare Network of physicians. Employees are also allowed to be in the United Healthcare specialist without a referral from a primary care physician. On December 6, 2021, Congress staff met with the Alba Group, Congress Insurance Brokers, to discuss the upcoming insurance renewal for the 2022-2023 fiscal year. United Healthcare initially proposed an 18.9% premium rate increase for hospital medical insurance. After continued negotiations with United Healthcare and the Gallup approved, United Healthcare proposed a 14.9% increase. This is based on hospital demographics and our claims experience. After an additional series of negotiations, United Healthcare proposed a comparable plan, their Navigate plan. This plan would ultimately result in a 5.52% increase in Hawkins' current insurance. The Navigate plan is very similar to the current medical coverage being offered to employees. However, it is considered a health maintenance organization, or what's commonly known as an HMO plan. Under this plan, the board will be required to select a primary care physician, a PCP, from United Healthcare. And employees would also be required to obtain a referral in order to see United Health, to see a United Healthcare specialist. Currently, employees are not required to do so under the current EPO plan. Last year, HACA received a rate pass and believes the proposed move from the current plan to the Navigate plan and a 5.5% rate increase are reasonable and fiscally responsible. In addition, for the 2022-2023 year plan year, HACA will continue to impose a surcharge of $50 per month to employees who choose to continue to use tobacco products. Employees may participate in and complete a tobacco cessation program if they wish to avoid the surcharge. HACA currently pays a very generous portion of insurance premiums for its employees. 100% for employee only coverage, 95% for employees plus spouse, 95% for employees plus children, and 93% for employees plus family. In an effort to continue to provide employees with the best affordable and available health care coverage, HACA recommends that United Healthcare be awarded the renewal contract to provide employee health insurance coverage for the 2022-2023 fiscal year by utilizing United Healthcare's Navigate plan. Our insurance brokers, Betty Wynn and Abigail Adams, are joining us virtually, and they are with the Gallagher Group, and they're here to address any questions that we may have regarding today's presentation.
Chair.
Question. Yes.
Question for Gloria.
Yes, go ahead.
Gloria, since it seems like we're going to go from the ability for the employees to choose a position, and now this will be, they have to be within the United family. Is that a pretty broad group of positions that the staff will have to choose from?
The only thing that's changing is the positions that are currently in United Healthcare care that we're using, they still have access to those same positions. So everyone in that network is still there. So it's not just a selection of positions that we have in HMO. There's only a few that are taken in HMO. So in this one, whatever is in United Healthcare care, they're able to access it.
So it's very broad.
It's very broad.
My question was pretty much the same. Has there been any comments from employees regarding the difficulty in selecting the primary care physician?
At this time, we did a lot of employees. I got primary care physicians. these kinds of things like in our university, because they're able to go to the specialist without having their referral from the primary care doctor. This way they will have a primary care doctor, and they will have to be like one. I don't see that it would be an issue for someone to have a primary care doctor, especially with the broad level of the.
Is there some way we can monitor that?
Commissioners, I would also just add, we absolutely are monitoring it. One of the reasons we're switching to this plan is because we have found that our utilization rate's gone up substantially over the last year. Because we want people to use their health insurance, but we also need to realize that if our substantial increases, it just seemed like a reasonable step having a primary care physician help horse track their care. So I believe the referral process is the way we go, and the referral from a PCP. If they need ongoing referrals, then they just go back each 6 months to get that. But the network is huge. It's one of the biggest in the country. United is the biggest insurer in the country. So no resource is being taken off the table. But this is a way to ensure really more greater efficiency in it, and we're going to try to avoid cost increases. Had we gone just comparatively from where the plan we have today and just signed up for that same plan again next year without this, we would have looked at close to 15% increase in cost. And that was negotiated down thanks to Gloria's efforts. But the intermediate step with the PCP, we think we kill two birds with one stone. One, greater cost savings for employees, and two, we think hopefully better health outcomes because there's a doctor actually, again, quarterbacking care.
Lauren, will there be more out-of-pocket for our employees on the HMO?
In this case, no, the out-of-pocket doesn't change. There's no change to our copay. The only copay change would be the $50 to see a specialist. And really, that's what we're bringing now, unless you go into a designated specialist, which is $40 at this time. So at this point, they would have to see their PCP first before getting that specialist. And if they have an established PCP already, they can do a virtual visit, which is no charge for them, but they don't even have to pay a copay to see their primary care.
Yes, that was what I was, so they don't have to go pay them and then go pay another copay. Mm-hmm. Did this doctor, there's no total deductible?
Our deductible is $500 at this time.
And what will it be in the next
month? It'll be the only thing we're changing is the amount for the physician, for the specialist.
You know, several years ago, HMOs kind of fell out of favor. Y'all are comfortable that this one is okay?
We met with United and we helped them, and they have other agencies that use this plan, and they haven't had any issues with it. We will monitor this year to see how it does come. If we do have some challenges, then we will get possibly going up again next year.
I would say that fair question. We did spend many, many weeks, if not months, on it. I think it's fair to say, I'll just speak on behalf of Ms. Blanco and myself, and we're not thrilled, but it's, we worked through Betty Gwynn, Gallagher is on the call, Abigail is on the call as well, and Janet Forbes has been helping us to navigate this space. I'm concerned, looking heavily at Gallagher over the next year, to see the implementation of this program, and I'm counting on them to help our staff to navigate that. We've had excellent service from Gallagher in the past. We've had some staff changes. This is going to be a little bit different change to the ecosystem. We're going to be looking very heavily at Gallagher and any United to make sure that there's good implementation that benefit our team members.
What about
how much
would it cost
if we just kept the same plan this time? It would be a 15% increase. What were we talking about? $500,000. It's not sustainable year over year. And so it was, and we've done things to drive the cost of policy changes down over the years to get, we've had several years of near 0% increases, and this one we just couldn't avoid it. I agree with you, and it's been a series of uncomfortable conversations. But I think the burden on the employee is it's not off the charts, and we think that as we think about where costs are, we've got to have conversations with our team members about you know, trying to reduce healthcare costs, and so we're going to be looking to Gallagher to help us with that. We thought about that. Should we bring it to you all that, but it would be $500,000 this year, and then United would come back next year with the same, and that wouldn't be sustainable over the.
Could you work out some kind of a deal that we'll pay the $500,000, government have to come back to us with a better deal next time?
We've told them that we're going to be looking to them. We talked to folks. Betty had great relationships with United and brought in really some of their most senior people for some pretty, again, more challenging conversations. Betty, you might want to chime in on this. But I think they were the utilization rate that we've had, you know, the sweet spot for utilization is about 75%, 80%. And we've historically hit, you know, some years it's 70%, some years it's 85%, but this year we're well over 110%, and we've still got another month to go in the plan. So at that point, we have to start looking at, you know, utilizing it and for what purposes, but also being very respectful of people's, you know, healthcare privacy rights as well. So we looked at everything from, you know, procedures, medications, the things that people were using, and I think we drove it to a sweet spot. Again, not an ideal spot, but for this year, we think that this makes sense. If we don't see where if we're not happy with where we are next year, if we don't feel like our team members are being well served by this, I know that Gloria has been, you know, gave us a fierce advocate for our team members. We'll come back and we'll have more conversations about either switching out of United or switching out of Gallagher or both.
Our employees, not I'm interested to see what kind of conditions. Our employees have had a rough year, had a rough 2 years, and it's just one more thing they're going to have to deal with.
We think the costs are de minimis. We think that the average employee family, Gloria is going to pay fairly small increase.
Actually, in your packet, it showed that the increase would be about $3.54 per month for an employee, and about $3.32 per month for an employee and children, and $8.68 per month for an employee and family. I could pay the significant amount of the premium already, so it won't be a large amount that's passed on.
So if we had to look in future years to going to provide 95% coverage and look to, or 90% coverage and switch to, you know, 80% coverage or other, you know, lower level, which is really more the standard that we're seeing. I mean, just to give you an example, one of the things we were looking at was, you know, was whether or not team members should be paying 20% of everything right off, as part of the working towards that maximum deductible. And raising the maximum deductible from $500 per individual to $4,000 per family, to raising it to $3,000 per individual and $6,000 per family, but that the individual would then also pay 20% of the cost of anything that was done, and we were very concerned about that because that would be an immediate burden to them. So keeping really everything exactly the same. That's what we've been assured is exactly the same. The only difference is if you've got a kid in college, you know, before, if they were insured by United Healthcare, they could go to a primary, they could go to any doctor they wanted wherever they were in school. Here, they're going to have a primary care physician in the Austin area that they'll utilize. But they can still get care, emergency care, you know, wherever they are. But they fall into a slightly different group. And the going to the PCP.
Well, from an employee peace of mind, I don't want to be picked up penny-wise and pound-foolish. It sounds like you've gone through all of my issues, all my questions. If y'all are comfortable with it, then I'll vote for it.
We are. We're not thrilled, but we're comfortable enough, and it's a reasonable choice for today. And I think that the board has been generous to the team members and our hosts that I think they know we fight hard on their behalf, and so our hope is that this will go well, and hopefully there'll be some better outcomes, and an understanding of healthcare. We're going to spend our March all staff meeting, that hour, we're going to spend that almost exclusively on healthcare and talk about the dynamics that go into play. Just let them be transparent and let folks into the process and let them know why insurance costs are going up and why we're making these changes. And then we'll also do that during the open enrollment period as well. So, we want folks to utilize the resource, but we want to make sure that we're utilizing it effectively.
Okay. So, Laura, you said the impact to you and your family would be less than $100, right? So what's the, let me phrase this correctly. What's the impact to the person who makes the least amount of money to a HOC employee? So somebody at entry level, what would be the impact to them?
It would be the same.
In terms of dollar amounts,
mm-hmm.
in terms of the percentage of their paycheck, it's a big difference.
Right.
Okay.
In terms of percentage of their paycheck, if they have the entire family covered, that's $8.15.
Well, probably for someone making our lowest paid employee is about $15-$16
an hour.
So it would be.
Okay. So I like to see these increases, but I do agree with Mark that the board has been very generous in terms of the contributions, that our portion of the healthcare contributions, but also the financial, the other compensations that we have given throughout the year, I think kind of offsets. Will help offset that. It's not a guarantee that we'll continue to do that every year. But, I trust you work with Gallagher and you all figure out something. Obviously, there are all sorts of issues you can do. You can do kind of what they call a utilization manager, which would require pre-approval before somebody goes. And I don't think we want to go down that road. But I think this is a good compromise per se. But I trust you'll work with Gallagher and to do the best that you guys can, given the market. Because if our utilization rate is high, they have no choice because the money has to come from somewhere. If you're going to the doctor, somebody's got to pay for it. And it's not that we don't want you to go to the doctor, but at the same time, it's just one of those kind of sticky areas and, individual privacy and all those issues come into play. So I would say I trust you and Gallagher done a very good job in the past in helping negotiate to get the best price we could in terms of insurance. So I trust that you all will continue down that road again.
Gloria,
go ahead.
A question on the utilization rate, and since that is out on the phone, it may be a better question for you. Are you seeing a higher utilization rate over the last year and 2 years? Probably as a result of pandemic and mental health issues. I mean, is this a typical scenario that you all are seeing?
You're on mute.
Abigail, you're on mute. Oh, I apologize. I guess I was muted in two places. So, yes, that is something that we are seeing across our book of business. Just due to the pandemic, there was a delay in care in 2020 where people were not going to the doctor. So then since then, over that time, it's kind of a compilation of reasons. where people were delayed going, so then maybe they had procedures that they didn't have done, or maybe they had conditions that went undetected for over a year. So that also is adding to plan costs. So whereas if people would have been going and getting care ongoing, it was delayed, and now we're seeing a lot higher claims because things went undetected. So that, and just with rising healthcare costs and people just seeking more care now that they're able to, utilization is definitely rising. So putting in this PCP requirement with the HMO is not something, like Mr. Gerber and Gloria said, it's not ideal. However, down the road, we do want people to have a relationship with their primary care physician. So that helps prevent people from just going directly to doctors for minor things that they maybe could have had resolved at a doctor's office with their primary care physician. So I know there are a lot, you know, a couple more boundaries and things that employees need to navigate and that need to be communicated. But however, hopefully further down the road, it will help lower costs and allow Housing Authority to continue being able to contribute as generously as you all do for employee plans, because people will have this relationship with their doctor. Whereas now, if you take the survey, most consumers do not. They kind of doctor hop or just go directly to a specialist when they need, and there's nobody that really has this relationship to help manage their care on an ongoing basis. So hopefully that will be kind of a plus side, a silver lining for this HMO, though I know it's not exactly ideal. So, Ms. Carrington, I hope that did help answer your question as far as utilization, too.
I would also add to, you know, to it that there's a lot of resources that United is throwing at it that we don't necessarily take advantage of. An example is that they provide a 24-hour virtual nursing hotline, student call. I used it myself when my spouse had took her eye out by hitting her head. And when we called, we did that before we went to the emergency room. And we asked, you know, do we need to go? The nurse told us we do need to go because we were not losing the eye. So we went. We need to guide our staff to call that hotline first, to make the determination of, you know, if that's something that you should be going to your doctor, you need to go to urgent care, which is less expensive, or do you need to go to a full-on emergency room, and help create some better gateways and getting just people thinking about healthcare. We also need to do some wellness programs as well around the areas of mental health, around areas of I said it's myself, you know, around you know, weight, around smoking cessation, and just other things that, you know, are all contributing factors. The reality also of our staff is that, you know, we're getting older, you know, our staff age has gotten a little bit older. We're seeing more instances of things you would expect to see. This year was not a great year for a number of people for a lot of reasons. But that's why we have good insurance, and why we're so proud that this board has ensured we have good insurance.
Yes.
And I think we've come up with I think this is a reasonable place to be for a year, and we're gonna learn a lot about our utilization, about our employees' needs. We'll be able to come back to this board with more detailed information. One thing that is sure that you can take home is that I think, and Betty and Abby have to give kind of a thumbs up or thumbs down, but I mean, my belief is that this set of healthcare benefits is still comparably, you know, in this region, you know, I don't say off the charts, but it's certainly far better than almost any. So we think we're going to advantage. We're going to hold on to it. With that, Mr. Chair, I would suggest that unless there's any questions, would there not be a motion to approve Ms. Morgan's recommendation on the health insurance?
Questions? Yes.
Second.
Pardon me?
Commissioner Carrington motioned to approve, and Ms.
Hold on.
I was just going to second.
So let me just read it out, because since we're virtual, make sure we're doing this right. So, Chair will entertain a motion to approve item number 3, which is resolution number 2735, approval and renewal of the contract for employee medical insurance. Recognize Commissioner Duncan Hall for a motion to approve. Recognize Commissioner Apostolo for a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll go back to item number two, and Ms. Morgan, you still have the floor.
As part of our comprehensive compensation program, HASA currently offers employees two options for our dental coverage through United Healthcare, a dental maintenance organization, a DHMO, and a preferred provider plan, the PPO, the provider plan. On December 6, 2021, HASA sat with Gallagher Group, HASA's insurance brokers, regarding the renewal rate for United Healthcare for HASA's dental insurance coverage. United initially proposed a 15.72% premium increase to the DHMO and an 8.6 premium increase to the PPO, our buyout plan, for the 2022-2023 plan year. Through a further series of negotiations between United Healthcare and the Gallagher Group, United increased the proposed premium rate to 4.53% to the DHMO plan and 4.5% to the PPO buyout plan for the fiscal year 2022-2023. Neither the DHMO nor the PPO plan received a premium increase for 2021 or 2022 plan year. In an order to continue to provide employees with the best available and affordable dental coverage and based upon the renewal rates provided by United Healthcare, the agency recommends that United Healthcare be awarded the renewal of the contract to provide employee dental coverage for 2022-2023 fiscal year. So, as stated, we did not receive an increase for the plan year from last year for our employees. And the premium that I've really seen is
Lauren, last time, did we have an HMO?
Yes. Well, we had offered two plans for our dental coverage.
Question maybe for, Abigail or Gloria. Is this just a little game? Like, the health insurer starts out at some amount that's extremely, an extreme increase over what it was the year before, and then we have somebody who basically helps us negotiate those rates, and then they come down. I mean, what happens if an organization doesn't hire someone like a Gallagher Group, and do they just pay whatever the health care provider says they're going to charge? I mean, it does seem like a little game to me.
I would just add sort of an anecdotal response. But I think I would generally agree with you, and I think it's similar, not dissimilar to how you purchase other insurance products on the market. You know, it's I think there's some data that forms the decision, but I have no way of knowing we have no limited ways of knowing kind of what the corporate drivers are for, you know, United or Humana or Aetna or Blue Cross Blue Shield. And those certainly change year over year, and they're public companies, and so they have, you know, other duties and responsibilities. I will say United has been very good to work with, and they've been generally responsive to our employees, you know, needs. And we were hesitant to shift to another provider. But yeah, I think for those of us around the table who've had experience in negotiating things out, I would consider it generally to be a pretty unprincipled negotiation. If someone starts at, you start at $5 and I start at zero and we get to $2.50, and getting it to where we're actually informing it with data and with context and, you know, looking at the longer term relationship and seeing the trends in the relationship, I'm not sure that I think it's informed somewhat by that, but I'm not sure that it's informed, I don't believe it's informed entirely by that.
Well, United, I'm getting a retiree in the employee's retirement system from the state of Texas. United Healthcare carries the insurance, carries the coverage for retirees and I think about 3 years, but had it for like several years, and have been very responsive, and I think a really good carrier.
Well, Mike, back to your deal, did your wife lose her eye?
No, no, she's fine. She hit it on an edge of the fireplace mantle and knocked herself out so she was fine. It took a couple of months to heal, but
and the nurse, you were glad you had a nurse that you called.
Yeah, we learned how to use it literally that night. We hadn't used it before, but within about 15 minutes, we were talking to a nurse, and the nurse said, most likely it's not a eye losing kind of thing that would require emergency room. But there's about a 10% chance that you could, and so if something had been ruptured. So because of that, you do need to go get it checked out tonight. So we went and had it checked out at the emergency room.
Well, maybe this is the lawyer we speak, but that also will cut down a lot of claims for the insurance company.
Yeah.
So it's kind of how you look at it.
But it was nice to have that service. And, you know, when you think about people who are in rural parts of the state or don't have immediate access, we have team members who do drive in significant distances, from Wimberley, south and out in Bastrop and, surrounding county. They may be, distant from better care. So the ability to call that service is also helpful as well. Someone in the household who's struggling. But the good news is this year everybody's seen that pretty healthy peak, so not much premium increase in dental. So we would recommend a motion to approve the dental insurance under resolution number 02735. I'm sorry, 02734, which is item 2, approving the renewal for contract for employee dental insurance. Commissioner Carrington moves to approve. Commissioner Solo moves to second. Is there any discussion? If you're all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Yes. Mr. Chair, with your permission, we'll move down to item number 4, which is presentation, session, and possible action regarding resolution 02736, approving the award of third-year contract for janitorial and day court services to M&R Elite Janitorial Solutions.
Ms. Nora
Velasquez.
Good afternoon. Yes, my name is Nora Velasco, and I'm the Director of Operations and Procurement. This is our renew. Thank you for approving the insurance. I know it means a lot for our employees, so thank you so much for it. We really do appreciate it. The presentation of Resolution 2736 is approving a renewal contract for janitorial service. And I wanted to make just a quick correction. My years are running together. Actually, this is the second year renewal. The first year is just the award. Last year was the first year renewal. This is the second year renewal, but it's our third year with them. So I just want to make sure we make that correction. We have had nothing but good results with this company, and they're very stable with the employees. I've been doing this for a long time, and it's very refreshing to have the same staff on a daily basis to do their job. There's a 1.5% increase, so we are recommending that we award this second year renewal to Elite Janitorial Service. And if there's any questions, I can answer them for you.
Nora, is this for cleaning this building, or what all does this encompass?
This contract is for quarter services to the building, which means that there's somebody here for 8 hours. We also do, we provide services for 1100 next door, and for some of the larger communities like ACCW, Sherman Heights, and Flores Education Center. They have janitorial services after hours. And this also includes the sanitizing of this building during the period of the year and people still, some of us are still here, so they're, they kind of, I saw the entrances, the doorknobs, elevator, back, and then we cleaned it on the year.
Thank you.
Question?
Any questions? Yes, sir.
Did I read somewhere that they do the community room?
Yes.
At the various sites?
Yes.
Any additional questions?
They've done a wonderful job. Nora's done a great job managing them. They've really provided great care for our buildings.
They've been very easy. Compared to other companies we've had in the past, they're very supportive, and whenever we have any problems, they address to them immediately, mainly at the site sometimes. And we'll make changes as we need to if anything arises. Mm-hmm. They're very accommodating for any amendments that we need to do, either to add on or take off.
Are they available for special events?
I'm sorry?
Are they available for special events if you need set up?
Oh, yes, yes.
Commissioners, we would ask for a resolution to approve, motion to approve resolution number 02736, the third year contract for janitorial pay porter services to M&R Elite Janitorial Solutions.
I think this is the second year. Didn't I think Nora said this is the second year as opposed to the third?
Yes, it's the second renewal. I wanted to make that correction. Last year was the first year renewal. This is the second year renewal. I asked them, we've been working with them for 3 years, and this is the second year renewal. My years are running together.
All right. So with that, motion by Commissioner Apostello, seconded by Commissioner Duncan Hall. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. So item number 5.
Thank you, Nora.
Thank you so much. And have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you. Item number 5 is resolution number 2737, approving revised utility allowance schedules for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. Garcia will present.
Good afternoon,
Commissioner. Good afternoon.
I'm Lisa Garcia. I'm the Vice President of Associated Housing, and I'm here to present resolution number 2637. Asking for approval of the revised utility allowance schedules. This is a routine item that we bring to you every year. We have to have our utility allowances reviewed to determine if there's been an increase of more than 10%. And this year we had the Incident Life Utility Allowance Division of Melrose do the review. And just in summary, it did reflect more than a 10% increase, primarily for the gas portion of the utilities. And in terms of a comparison, compared to last year, just overall, if a tenant had all gas utilities and paid all utilities, their increase would be anywhere from, on average, about $20 to $25, depending on the vendor size, overall. And then for, same for the single family home and multifamily, it's about the same. So it's an average of about $20 to $25 increase overall. I open up for any questions.
Annual increase. Is that the annual or monthly?
Monthly. Yeah. You know, for the voucher program, it's really just depends. You know, this is just an average. It goes with the rent calculation. What their actual utility allowance are is going to depend on where they live and so forth. But this is a part of the rent calculation. So if the utility allowances are a little higher, what that means is when you do the rent calculation, they can't afford as much of a payment. It's like 40% of the total housing cost. So that's something we'll have to consider when we're looking at our payment standards and so forth. Put that in a part of the future. Families are able to continue to afford a place to live in a hospital. So
it does have some. So, Lisa, let me ask you just a logistical question. So through the choice voucher program, we pay a portion to the landlord, right? Do we send the utility allowance to the resident, or do we include that as part of the, when it goes to the landlord?
We send it directly to the family.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's their responsibility to pay the utilities. So they, and we do it through a debit card right now. So they, you know, there's no check. It goes on to the debit card.
Do you have a problem with all utilities? No.
Then they would not receive one.
Yeah. So, yeah, it depends on what the utilities are. For each unit, it's different depending on what the utilities are.
And then one, one question on the increase of the gas. Is any of that as a result of big profits and thought that the gas companies are making, passing on to the users? Is that any of this increase part of that?
No, I haven't researched it in terms of the reason specifically for it. So I can't, I don't feel comfortable commenting on that.
I don't feel comfortable asking the question.
I was going to ask a different type of uncomfortable question, whether or not the increase reflected cost of their weatherization cost. And because $25 a month seems like a pretty large increase as far as I'm concerned, or if my head been in the sun.
Well, it depends on the unit size. If they're in a zero, it's going to be around $17. But, and that's if, you know, they could get a unit that is all electric. So if it's like all electric units, they're not going to see that increase because for the electric portion, that didn't really go up. So the overall increase for electric, like an all electric, is only about $3 to $4.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends if they're in a unit with gas, it's going to cost them a little more money. And, you know, it just depends. In some cases, the owners pay for the utilities. In some multifamilies, it might be they're paying for the utilities, so then it's not going to really affect the family. Or just situation's different, depending on the way the lease is structured and what the owner's paying and what the tenant's paying.
But generally speaking, are most of our units more electrical than gas or the other way around?
You know, I'm not sure. I need to look into that and see what the breakdown is, which we could do that.
I think that would be helpful. Just, you know, so everyone knows, there's a huge fight between the gas and electric industry. With a number, what I would say, advocates are advocating to go to all gas appliances. And then there are others who are working tooth and nail to keep things where the cities are also starting to give rebates for all gas appliances, and the oil and gas industry feel like they're getting knocked out of being able to have competitive in terms of their appliances that are run by gas. So just to keep that in mind, because as Lisa said, if you've got a place and everything is electric,
mm-hmm.
then your increase is very small, but if it's on natural gas,
mm-hmm.
part of that is just the market. You got disasters that increase gas.
Mm-hmm.
Before winter storm Uri last year, the gas market spiked, and that's what some utilities looked at in terms of being able to prepare. They saw the gas market. Gas markets are spiking now,
mm-hmm.
in large part doing two things. One, COVID, and two, the threat of war between Ukraine and Russia, because Russia has the pipelines with natural gas and oil. And so those external factors do impact just sort of the everyday resident that we don't think of in terms of what's driving my costs up. But I think it would be good to understand whenever we do a development, existing development that we have, to understand whether gas or electric or a combination of both, and anything going forward in the future. Obviously, we can't dictate what a developer wants to put in, but it would be helpful for us to know, so when utility allowances do increase, we kind of have an idea as to why.
Right.
Commissioner Bailey, I have a good question.
Back to my question. The utilities, some of them got really hot with the gas cost during the ice storm. And they convince the legislature to let them pass it on to consumers.
Right.
And we're talking billions of dollars. I think you have like all 30 years to pay it.
Yeah.
But the utilities and the gas companies, and all those money they deal with.
But fortunately for those folks who live in the Austin area, that didn't really impact them. The folks who are really impacted by those costs for the utilities on the electric side, those were Central Texas, north of us, and then East Texas. And then there were some gas, small gas companies got hit pretty hard, and others, they made money. But again, understanding sort of that mix of what our utilities are will help us better plan in the future.
Commissioners, I think that's a really powerful discussion. There's a lot of forces, and I think about Ron's AAC portfolio, which could probably give us a lot of clarity around this issue because we've got really so many different product types. Whereas in our PBRA portfolio, it's a bit different. Whereas in our Section 8 portfolio there, too, we have a large number of Section 8 residents who live in AAC properties. It'd be worth doing some additional analysis, and we'll try to get that for you as we look towards next year. It is amazing how many other things are factoring in. But internationally, right here, this agency, it does have an impact. Just doing a quick time check, though, I would suggest that we might want to the conversation along, and we'll take this under advisement and try to get you guys some additional data points. Shortfall where we, at the end of the day, we actually went over the amount of vouchers that we issued. So, by 20 or 30, not by a huge number, but some agencies have gone over by, hundreds, if not thousands, and that can cause major budget challenges. So Lisa and her team do a great job of navigating uncertainty from D.C., which really hits us in this program because we don't know. Yeah, it's hard to know how many vouchers to issue if you don't know how much to spend. So,
right. Yeah, that's what we need to know right now. So, as you say, like, fly the plane and land just perfectly. I mean, they're a little stressed.
Don't overshoot the runway.
And, the thing, in Austin, it is a crucial time. I mean, horrible, I keep seeing things every day, hear about it in the news. But I'm seeing, I had something the other day come to me where a family, the owner increased the rent. They can't afford it, so they're having to move out of Austin. So we are going to have to look at it in the context of utility allowances, the payment standards, as well as what funding we have to see what we need to do to make sure people can leave their homes.
This is a conversation we can have later, but I'm just kind of curious how that works if we give somebody a voucher and they got to go to Round Rock. And Robert Rock has a housing authority, the portability issue. It's something we can discuss a little bit later, but that does raise some issues that we ought to discuss. So with that, are there any more questions regarding item number 5, which is resolution number 2737? If not, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the item. Motion by Commissioner Carrington, seconded by Commissioner Costello. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And we'll go to item number 6, which is the presentation, discussion, and possible action regarding resolution number 2738, authorizing office and project of 150 housing choice vouchers and 50 fast vouchers in response to a request for a proposal issued on November 5th, 2021.
Thank you. With regards to this, we did put the requested proposal out on November 5th, and we received a total for the regular vouchers. We received a total of 8 proposals from 6 different companies, and for the VAS, we received a total of 2 proposals from 2 different companies, with 3 individuals from the Housing Authority who reviewed the proposals and scored the proposals. And the project is for the exciting to see. A great project, development all over the city of Boston, so the relationships are great. Looking at the project and the board, what we want to do is amend the request from the original that we put out. We want to award actually 170 regular project-based vouchers and 50 batch project-based vouchers. We are allowed to go up to 20% of our baseline allocated vouchers and an additional 10% above that if we designate for the homeless or veterans. Currently, we have 308 vouchers allocated for them. We're requesting an additional 220, which is within 7.3% of our allocated vouchers. We're below that, 30% threshold. So let's pour out this one from real quickly because I know we're time crunch. The first one was Office of Affordable Finance Corp. They're partnering with Family Elder Care. It's a hotel conversion project. It was handled with suites. They're calling it the project at Pecan Park. This is located at 620 and 183. 78 total units. Recommending awarding them 50. They were the highest score, too, so the proposals were recommended to more than 50 project-based vouchers. And that, as I said, the total completion time estimated would be December 2022. The next one is
question. Is this the one that's gotten so much press because of the neighborhood concerns, et cetera?
It has had concerns raised about this project, but it is a very high priority of the city, and we coordinated with the city and understood, you know, how they're managing and navigating the project.
Mm-hmm.
The city is proceeding with it, and the city council is they've approved it. It's moving forward, and so we were really being asked to simply come in and be part of this funding stream to be able to provide long-term operating subsidy. No doubt about it that the project has controversy around that, and that's being dealt with by council, but we would be a piece among many pieces of it that would be vital to the project.
What is our role in that project?
We would be the long-term operating subsidy for 50 of the, how many units are at the property?
78.
So we would be the long-term operating subsidy for 20 years for that property.
Okay. And someone else is providing the support services?
Correct. They're being provided by the Family
Elder Care. It looks like I really felt good about this one. It's like aging in place. It's literally the Family Elder Care is going to provide the support services. Really strong. The proposal was strong. It was the highest scoring proposal. We all three of us that reviewed it felt really good about that and what we put forth. It was really good.
And the real problem was that there was not early discussions with the neighborhood, and they sort of felt as if this was sort of thrown at them in consultation.
And those are fair concerns, and we certainly respect, the challenges that the neighbors face working with officials, and we certainly feel for our colleagues at the city who have been working, you know, on the project. I think there was a lot of misunderstanding between them. Our belief is that much of that has been worked out, and the building's been purchased. It's now held by the city, and it's being converted. And so the many millions of dollars used to pay for the building itself, that's already been done. We're again coming in as the long-term operating subsidy for it. So we're a small piece, but an important piece of it. But absolutely, there's a little hair on that project, no doubt about it. But I think the city has been working to navigate that. I think part of it also is that there was also hair. I would remind the board for the terraces at Oak Springs project that you all put 50 vouchers into. There's a lot of folks in the community who didn't want that project either. It's hard to say that homeless serving properties should be all throughout the community, and we're finding that that it's hard, and we understand the concerns that are out there, but in order to meet that need, we all have to share that opportunity to help and serve. And so that's what we're doing here. We did it at the terraces at Oak Springs. We're hoping to do it here with the concurrence of this board, and that's staff's recommendation here, and the community's really invested heavily in that project. But there will be others coming forward as we do project basing to meet the needs of the homeless, which is really the big reason why we're doing project basing. We really are kind of the indispensable partner in a lot of helping address homelessness in the city.
And the one at Oak Springs is what, third year though?
Yes, ma'am. Third or fourth.
Third or fourth. Yeah. And has there been?
Not a problem at all.
Has anybody discussed that or advertised that?
They do, but memories are short, and the fact of the matter is that everyone in the city will say that's a wonderful project. There. And I respect and understand people who have come from that perspective. I don't share it, but I understand it. But I think the problem is that as a community, we need to have better listening ears about how to do and address affordable housing needs and homeless needs as well. And every once in a while, a project gets tripped up, and we've seen that Elysium got tripped up. Taos, the terrace at Oak Springs, got tripped up. Commissioner Carrington can attest to many, many projects that got tripped up by very poor community engagement, and this project's no exception. But it doesn't take away the imperative of what our piece is.
I can't think of a single project that would not undergo that kind of problem without community engagement. Seems that that's the necessary piece.
It is. We don't do homeless service delivery here, and you all got a chance to see that at the last board meeting. And maybe this is a moment to say, because we don't understand the issues really the way we need to. One example of that is that, this board asked for data on who was really impacted by the criminal background criteria that you all have in place. And we've now heard back from ECHO that they don't have the data, even though they represented this board, that they did have the data. So we're working to, figure that one out. We don't have the data. We don't have the information. We really are, in so many ways, very much behind as a community. I will say that the mayor and members of the council and the housing committee, Councilmember Harper Madison and others have been very helpful in helping to steer the development of a cohesive homelessness policy. Mm-hmm. And we're pleased that these are some of the early parts of that, where it's a shared responsibility and where more service providers are coming into the mix to help. One of the projects you're going to see here, number five, Katie Loss, which Ms. Gaskin is here to talk about. That's a development that HACA will actually be part of that structure. And we're excited about that. But one of the finest supportive services providers in the country, New Hope Housing in Houston, is going to help us here in Austin, because we need more capacity. It will come in here and work with us on that project and be providing some really critical assistance. you know, this is a city that, you know, grew too fast and needs a lot, and needs more. And our funding is going to be a piece of a lot of that.
I'd just like to say one thing, probably isn't very politic for me. Oh, sorry.
I can hear you.
Okay. I remember when I first came to Austin many, many years ago and got involved with several nonprofit organizations, and there was a very healthy competition among them, and many of them were sort of going for the same clientele as what I call creaming from the top, so that they could get that type of funding that they all were seeking. And it took a long time of my working with the various groups to get them to even talk to each other, much less cooperate. And I'm very happy to see that with this issue, there's been significant cooperation, and which has come over time. And I cannot say that it was probably easy at the beginning, because as I look at the names of some of these individuals and nonprofits that are listed here, there was very healthy skepticism among these various groups that this would ever happen. So I'm delighted to see the names there. I'm sure it has not come without a lot of wringing of hands and pulling out hair, but at least there's significant movement. So I just want to congratulate all those who worked on this to make that happen.
Thank you. We've still got a long way to go. And Lisa's right in the thick of it, serving on the ECHO Leadership Council, and we've got a long way to go as a community. But there's widespread agreement and support for these five projects. If for no other reason, as evidenced by the fact that there's not, you know, 500 people in the room today. So I think that there's strong support for these five, community consensus around these five, and a reflection of the community values that, you know, as an agency and this board has aspired to. And so we would recommend the approval of resolution number 2738, authorizing HOC and entered agreements for housing assistance payment contracts for the five properties that have been identified in your board book for project basing of vouchers.
I so move.
Motion by Commissioner Duncan Hall, seconded by Commissioner Carrington. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries, and we'll go to item number 7.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Cobalt.
Mike, I wasn't looking at just brought up. Did we need to amend? I don't think so, because in the resolution we put the total numbers. It wasn't, you know, because original the title of it said 150.
Yeah, this question. So what the board just voted on was to authorize HOC to project-based 150 housing choice vouchers and 50 VASH project-based vouchers.
It's actually 170. We would need 70 regular project-based vouchers. And
I apologize. It's in the correct in the resolution, but not in the item. So could we go back and ask that you, the board, re-vote?
So I'll recognize Commissioner Bailey for a motion to reconsider vote by which we just approved. Item number six, and Commissioner Duncan Hall for a second of that motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are back to item number six, and we will amend that to reflect that the total number of vouchers is
170 housing choice vouchers and 50 VASH project-based vouchers.
I'll recognize Commissioner Bailey on that motion to approve item number 6 as amended. And Commissioner Carrington for the second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. And I will recognize Mr. Kowal on item number 7.
And Mr. Chair, yeah. I apologize. Ms. Gaskin, did you want to speak regarding that item? Sally, did you want to speak regarding that item? Did you want to speak regarding that last item? I'm sorry that I forgot that you're good. Okay. Thank you very much.
Commissioner Carrington?
Mr. Chair, don't we need to go to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation first?
Sure, I will turn over to you so we can go to Austin Affordable Housing Corporation.
The meeting of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation has been called to order. We have had a roll call and we do have a quorum present. The next item for business is any citizen communication related to the business of the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation. Has anyone signed up?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. The citizen's speaking.
Okay. Then we will close citizen communication. The next item is the consent item, which is the approval of the board minutes of the meeting that was held on November the 18th, 2021. Do I hear a motion to approve?
Second.
Mary approves. Carl second. All in favor? Any opposed? Okay, thank you. Two action items. And the first one is discussion on resolution 00197, and this authorizes the Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to take all actions that are necessary to facilitate the acquisition of the Haywood Apartments, which consists of multifamily housing units in Austin, to be ground leased from the City of Austin, from the Housing Authority of Austin, to cause AAHC subsidiary to own the development, cause the owner to enter into an acquisition and development financing, and cause AAHC and the owner to execute any documentation necessary to allow the consummation of the transaction. With that, Mr. Caldwell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of these days, we're going to figure out how these attorneys can make these shorter. I think they like this. First of all, it's glad to be back. I'm excited to be here after we missed January, and I just wanted to assure you that AHC, myself, Suzanne, and our attorney here, Sarah, has been hard at work since we got back after the holidays. I just want to make a really brief announcement that Sarah is in tow with the next great lawyer for Coach Rose. She's not sure what it is yet, but congratulations. It's a boy, so we're going to have a we're really excited.
What happened to our other lawyers?
Which ones?
From
Culture. They're here. I mean, they're not on the call today. Bill's traveling, I believe.
Right.
So Sarah's here in on mm-hmm. behalf.
And so, sometimes the big firms will shuffle stuff around.
Sometimes they do.
They're always stuck with me.
It's not a bad fit to have Sarah here. She's been on our side for a very long time. So.
Sarah, how many years have you been with Coast Rose?
6.5.
And working with us really the whole way, almost the whole way through, yeah. It's been a great partnership.
All the graduates, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's also very big on the rad side as well with us, too. So congratulations, Sarah. We're happy for her. So in effort of time, I know time is precious. I'll give you a quick synopsis of resolution number 197, and then I'll defer to questions from you all, should you have them. The Haywood is a 372-unit apartment complex located in South Austin off I-35 and 1626 in Austin. It is a brand new apartment complex, very similar to the Lucent. If you all remember, a couple months ago, you passed the Lucent, which was a new construction deal, and we were in startup lease up and temporary certificates of occupancy. This is another one very similar to the Lucent. Again, it's 372 units. We have 276 one bedroom, one baths. Anywhere from 624 square feet to 773. And I apologize, I, for some reason, have a number of 148 two-bedrooms. I have no idea where that came from. It is actually 96 two-bedroom, two-baths that range from 995 to 1177, but that was probably my fat fingers typing something wrong. So I apologize for that mistake. So that's the 372. We're partnering this with Belveron Corporation. You've heard the name before. This is would be, should you approve this, our seventh transaction. We've actually had this project under contract for many, many months now as it was being finished out prior to the start of the new year of 2022. And again, should we get this passed today, we'll be closing sometime at the end of this month. So we're really excited about that. I guess I can tell you that it's in a very up and coming, again, thriving area. We have many assets around the Haywood. And so we know this demographic real well. The current makeup of this unit is currently about 86% occupied, and it's trending at 91% leased, and that was as of yesterday. So the traffic is very ambitious and very, very, very good. It's been marketed as a Taj Mahal on the affordable at a budget, and that was what attracted us to this property to begin with. And the rents here, some of the units are actually very, very good, very favorable. For our 50% of these units at or below 80%, or actually below 80% of the AMI. We will be, as we move forward on this property, we will be doing some sizable discounts to the units, especially on our larger 2.2s. We're looking at in the neighborhood of probably a $545 a month rent adjustment downward, in order to make these meet the affordable needs of our families. That's what we're excited about. The biggest markups on these market rent units on this project seem to be the larger units, where they can take advantage of more dollars. And so that's where we'll make a sizable dent in this property to bring it to compliance at 50% below 80. I will say that AMP, our management company, we negotiated for them to start the management of this 2 months ago. Prior to us closing it, and again, Belmont has every intention of closing it anyway, and so we were able to go in and have some control over the warehouse and the affordable side. Yeah. So we've been very hands-on meeting, trying to get our affordable goals met and balancing that with the current owner's willingness to still want to make some cash flow. So we're talking about, we're at a little bit over about 32% of affordability at this to meet our 50% goal, but the way we're trending, we think it's not going to take very long to meet that 50% AMI. I always like to say when we don't have too many properties that we purchase that are not meeting that criteria off the bat, but we, because of where we are in Austin today and because of what you've seen in rent growth and appreciation, we're finding this happening more and more and more, that the projects that we're targeting have zero affordability and are very, very much out of compliance that we need to be in control. So what we do when we take over this, and this property is no exception, and we're doing it now when and if we close, no units will be rented to market rent tenants until all our affordability requirements are met. And that's not an exception, and that's the rule. So it may take us a month, it may take us a two, it may take us three, but we will not lease any units until we hit all our affordability. And that affordability will range amongst all floor plans, amongst all the bedrooms. So they're not being thrown into one unit or one
place. Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
In the event that we do approve this today, when will you close?
Right now, I think we're targeting mid next week, possibly. We're still waiting on some final things from the seller to carry on to provide to us in terms of the last couple buildings that need to be get their final temporary certificate of occupancy. So that's what we're trending on right now.
Okay.
It's an expensive property. It's $106,750,000.
Yeah, Ron. Excuse me, but let me interrupt you there. That's an awful lot of money.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, so I'd like to have, I'll have that discussion with you and kind of bringing up to speed, and that's something that you'll be seeing here in the next few months as I present some materials to you all about AHC and what some of the things I promised to do for you on the social service side, but also on the trendings, what's going on. While it does seem very expensive, it is. Compared to what we've seen over the many years, we're seeing that we're turning down properties right now the property we just turned down in at the Domain was $435,000 a door. It's a 1980s property that's Arboretum Oaks, which I think you're familiar with. It's probably right there by the Arboretum. It's built in the early 80s. We looked at that. That's trending at $280,000 a unit. It's built at a 1980s product. So we're seeing that there's still a lot of silly, funny money in this city, and the competition's very great. So we're being very careful and looking at some of these deals where we're going to pay $280,000 a unit for this. We're creating, again, half of those units will be at below 80% AMI. We've got two new construction development projects very close to it that are at 60% AMI. And then we've got several other 50 and 80 units around there. So we feel like we've got a good sort of a blend of meeting the demand of this property. I don't know if we're going to see any relief in sight from pricing, but we are being very careful in not getting to a situation where we can't make it work. And we say, well, what does that mean? How do we not make it work? We can't make it work if we have to lower rents and we have to pay too much for a piece of property.
Well, and that's my question. Just set aside that I don't ever remember coming close to 100.
We did. Yeah. The Lucent was the same problem. We had this discussion in December on the Lucent, I believe.
Yeah,
well.
I think I wasn't here then, so we'll have it again for just a second.
Okay.
We spend that much money on the property, and then we lower the rents to make it affordable. How does that work?
Well, it works because we're property tax exempt, and we have some of those types of things. So that's the trade-off. So the benefit of that exemption is that we are able to bring those rents down to a manageable below 80% AMI in order to obtain that exemption. So it's sort of a trade-off.
And who are we buying this from?
It's a local company here called Stillwater Development. They're an Austin group. They do primarily high-end single-family homes and some high-end commercial and some obviously high-end multifamily. Pretty large local group. They come from various different companies that they formed. They've been in business about six, seven years that we had a relationship with. It was a very competitive situation in that we were competing up in the final and best among six other offers. This one was fortunate that we were able to persuade them. We were the only group that was actually providing this affordability component and actually bringing rents down to a reasonable level for affordability, and that kind of seemed to attract their attention a little bit, and we're appreciative of that. Sometimes sellers don't care what we do or who we are, and we've had that happen to us as well, but in this particular case, they were very warm and fuzzy to us about that, asked a lot of questions about how we were going to do it, just like you are, and so we did that during our interview process, and they selected us as the preferred purchaser for this.
And then what does Papa come in with the final?
So what happens is Elk Run will come in with the ability to purchase. They have the guarantees on this 100%. We don't, by the way, as well. The land at the closing, the land piece will be deeded over to the Housing Authority of the City of Boston. So HACA controls the land. And then the asset itself is then transferred over to the partnership that we form with Belveron, and so we're the general partner, so we're the managing member, general partner, and we control, have consent rights and some control rights as to how the property operates.
And what consideration does HACA get for having the property sent to them?
Well, HACA doesn't get anything on the actual transaction, but we get income incentives from the deal that are given to AHC. That's the revenue we generate based on the transaction. So where we negotiate how we're paid to get a financial arrangement that we work through and negotiate through with our partners. Yeah. And it's kind of a detail that I don't know if the time we want to go into that, but it's a very beneficial MOU that we negotiate through a memorandum of understanding, I think when we get into our budget meetings next month, you'll see it's very, very profitable. It's very good for us. But we're doing a great job on the affordable side here in Create. And Bell Run's niche kind of seems to be looking at these properties more and more that have no deferred maintenance, no issues that we're going to have to come up with. But then we're also taking a product that has zero affordability and trending not to have any affordability in the future and creating that affordability for many years to come. They're not a company that's looking for the quick sale, so we're looking forward to that. Yes, sir.
So what I've got to run, but what I want to say is, one, I think this is a really good deal in that we're able to bring rents down by $145 a month. You don't see that anywhere in Austin, Texas. So this is a really big, big deal. And two, given the quality of the product, I think what you said at the end in terms of bringing in affordability to that type of quality product, because I would consider it's almost maybe Class B, not quite Class A.
Class A, beautiful quality. I can't wait to show it to you.
Yeah, but in any event, to be able to have some of our folks, because what we're doing is creating opportunity for Lisa's clients to go somewhere, but unfortunately some of Chuck's former class of gas clients, a secondary. I don't even know if you ever represented gas class, but in any event, you and I are the same size.
Yeah, not anymore. I found out I was representing royalty owners at the end of my gas.
And our two bedrooms are actually going to be reduced to over $545 a month.
Yeah. Well, I got to run. But I think this is a great deal. I think you guys have done a really great job. You and Suzanne, we applaud it. Again, this is really something extraordinary to be able to reduce rent at a quality property like this. And, again, to be able to create more opportunities for housing choice voucher families. So I really appreciate it.
Madam Chair, should we try to vote before Carl leaves, if possible?
I mean, if you got more questions, that's fine. But, if I was here, I'd be voting A.
I just want to make one comment and then I'll call the question.
Okay.
You see on this one that the interest rate is 3.15.
Yeah.
Who knows how much longer we're going to have those kinds of interest rates. And that has been one of the things over the last 3-4 years that has really facilitated AAHC purchasing a number of these properties. We were paying 5-7% interest. A lot of them went Chuck, when you talk about how does this work,
Is not going to work, but it's 3.15, that's a good rate. Okay, so if nobody has any more questions or comments, then I will call the question to approve resolution 0017 to move forward with all the necessary documents and purchases of the Haywood apartments. Mary Lou? Second. Carl, second. Any more questions, comments? All in favor? Aye. Any opposed?
Thank you all very much.
Thank you all.
Hi, Mr. Jarrett. Our next item for Austin Affordable Housing Corporation is Resolution 00198, and this is authorizing Austin Affordable Housing Corporation to execute any and all documents or take any and all actions that's necessary to participate in a housing tax credit application for, I'm calling it Katie Loss, is that right?
Yeah, Katie.
Okay, Katie Loss. And Suzanne will be presenting this item.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Mr. Gerber, staff, and guests. I'm excited. First of all, I want to thank the board for all of your votes last year. We had a tremendous, Austin Affordable had a tremendous year. And as Ron said, we have not stopped working, so we're excited to jump right back into 2022. And today, I'm really excited about this product. You know, when you look at our portfolio, you know, we serve all clients at all income levels all over the city. And Ron may have a little bit of a higher income level on this one. Mine, we come back in, and now we're at the lower income level. Mm-hmm. So this one's a really exciting one. It's in the 9% competitive tax credit round, which I'm kind of scared of usually, but we have great partners. Sally Gaskin is here. She's with SGI Ventures.
We also have two other of her partners that will consult on this. Lisa Stevens with Sagebrook Development and Megan Lash with OSDA. We did partner with them on a property already, a Lisa Grand, and it's up north off of Mopac. 100% leased. It's phenomenal property. They really, really turn out a really great product. This one, Katie Loss, is 100 units. It's located off of 39th Street, East 39th Street, and 35. So it's a really high opportunity, really great area. This is going to be a supportive housing property. So we'll be serving incomes, the majority of them around 30% area median income, up to 60%. We will have, because it's going to be supportive housing, the demand is for smaller units. So we'll have 84 efficiencies and 16 one-bedroom, one-bath. Along with our developer partners, we are bringing in Joy Horick Brown out of New Hope Housing in Houston. She has a very well-respected years of experience in development and supported housing. So she's going to be the social services coordinator. And then we will also bring in, once we do get the tax credit award, because I believe we will, we're going to bring in an actual boots on the ground service provider, which we're talking to several companies right now. We haven't decided on them yet. But I think this is just going to be such a great combination of talent and a great development that we really, really need in Austin. It's going to serve the population that is most vulnerable, and I can't think of partnering with a better group on this. And so I guess that's all. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I didn't catch it and I didn't see it. The dimensions of the units and the number, like you said, so many efficiency units.
I have 84 efficiencies and 16 one-bedroom, one-bath.
Okay.
And that could tweak a little bit. This is the first time you're seeing this.
Uh-huh.
And I should add this to begin with. This is just the resolution to approve that we go into the application round,
right,
for the 9%. You will see this again once we do get those tax credits and are, you know, closer to closing. So I will present, you know, the final product with all the dimensions.
But we're really dealing with single people in this project.
Yeah, because of supportive housing, it's normally either singles or, you know, smaller by couples.
All right. And so there are going to be supportive services available in this
on site. We're building offices, community rooms for the social services provider to actually be on site.
Okay.
And the applications are due March 1. Is that still correct?
Yeah. Yeah, well, we got to move on this.
Yes. In order for us to be partners on it, we would need to have this to be approved today.
Yeah,
we're willing to do that.
Yes.
And we believe there's a fair amount of excitement in the city about this project.
I think this is definitely worth moving on.
Yes, ma'am.
And I'm ready to.
Are you ready?
I'm ready to move.
All right. So we have a motion to approve resolution 0019, and Tyra has made the motion. Mary has seconded the motion. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Eight. Commissioner Carrington?
Yes, sir.
I would just interject that we haven't, because of the pandemic, been able to really get you all out to see properties. But when you leave today and you come out of the parking lot, you turn right and go down to Woodward.
Mm-hmm.
Right at the corner of Woodward and I-35, you'll see a fairly new apartment complex, bright colors, very pretty. It's called Aria Grande.
Aria Grande.
Grande. And It's a lovely project. That one was built by Ashoda, by Megan Lash and the team. So that's the partnership. And that's the quality of construction and just the beauty of design that, that I think we're expecting at Katie Lofts and that we're, you know, anticipating, you know, within our partnership with that group. So it's an exciting partnership for us. Elysium, which is a project that we've been involved in, which is up north near National, north of near National Instruments, is also a beautiful project as well, property as well, community. And we feel really confident in that partnership and the partners that are included, not just Megan, but, you know, Sally and others and folks who have been in the business for a long time and have a real eye towards really meeting community need. So take a look when you go driving back down the highway.
And the unique thing about their developments is they also partner with local, like, artists and things to paint murals if they've got, like, open parking around. And it's just really, really good community, you know, local partnership.
Any other questions or discussion? Any other business to come before Austin Board of Honor Corporation before we close the meeting? Your motion to close. Erin?
I'll second.
All right, all those in favor? Any opposed? All right, and the meeting of the Austin Housing Finance Corporation closes at 2:01 p.m. on February the 17th.
Okay.
Did y'all vote to approve this resolution? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
We're just
all right. I was in the middle of it.
We did.
You smell the shoes.
Yeah. We have Duncan Hall and then Apostolos Echo. Correct. Great. Okay. So it's approved. Mr. Chairman, so I think we're back down to the main hot agenda to item number 7, which is a presentation, discussion, and possible action on resolution 2740 by the Board of Commissioners of the Housing Authority of the City of Austin to take the following actions with regard to the Haywood Apartments in Austin, Texas. 1, acquire the site of the development. 2, lease the development site to the owner of the development. And 3, such other actions necessary or convenient to carry out this resolution.
All right, members, you heard of this.
This is the Haywood, and you've heard my explanation. This is just the part where this is the transaction where HACA retains the land and ground leases it back to the partnership, it's the same scenario. So I don't know if you want me to go into the details again.
Any questions, Frank? Have we done this before, where HACA has taken the property? And
every single asset that AHC owns, HACA owns the land.
Anything else? All right, I'll entertain a motion to pass resolution number 27.
Next, I have a motion from
Commissioner Carrington. I have a second. Second from Commissioner Alcestello. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye, second. Thank you. That looks like, is that all we got?
That is all we have. I have a couple of other small items that I wanted to share with you. Ask your indulgence for just 1 second. As Andrea loads up something. While we're waiting, so I think many of you know that Pilar Sanchez has departed. She had a great opportunity to go join the county to serve as their new chief executive for Health and Human Services. It's a huge area of responsibility, and we're going to miss her very much. Before you start it, hold on a couple minutes. It's a huge area of responsibility.
Mike, would she be able to give her husband orders?
Always have. I don't think I don't think it's going to change there. I know she.
Oh, well, that's an interesting thought.
Yeah, she is definitely going to be missed here and did a lot of really special things. Tomorrow at 10 o'clock, we'll have an opportunity as a staff to join online to say goodbye to Pilar. But I thought you might be interested to see the there was a really lovely video done by some members of our team, and I thought you might like to see that video, because it celebrates Polar Art, but it also celebrates all of the work that the agency does. So. Jump on to a planning call that they have that they're doing. So she's already started her work. But I'm very grateful to Leilani Vieth-Lim and Lim Vieth and Barbara Jackson and Catherine Credo and others in our Austin Pathways team who will step up and will make sure that we don't miss a beat. One of the things we're going to be doing, though, as we go through the budget process, we're also going to look at how we really focus on kind of core things within Austin Pathways and try to further define, you know, our key work, because we can't do everything. And during the pandemic, we really had to step up and do everything, right? Definitely shake your head. And so we're going to try to see what we can do to really kind of go back to, you know, kind of those core areas where we know that there are immense resident needs, you know, around job training and health and wellness and education, and see if we can slip a little more easily back into some of that work and go deeper and bring more of our families along. The second thing I wanted to share with you is that we obviously continue as a staff to work, you know, in a virtual environment. We've been with Omicron, you know, almost entirely from home. We are going to come back to a 25% in the next week or two, and then after that, we'll be looking probably, we'll give it 6 weeks, see what we see, and then we'll probably look to come back at 50%. Our intention is to go to 50% and then to hold, and see where we are. There's a lot of demand from our team members to work in a hybrid environment, so we'll continue to, you know, work in a hybrid environment for a considerable period of time and see if it works and can fit with our dynamic. And of course, you all gave us a hybrid work policy that this board approved, so we have the ability to work remotely. And I don't think the agency has missed a beat. I'll ask Sylvia Blanco maybe to quickly chime in on Rosewood, because I think there's some things happening there that you might want to just be quickly updated on, but nothing major, but just as we work towards moving forward with that project. Again, we're looking to close really over late summer. Sylvia.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber, and good afternoon, Commissioners. There's a lot going on in Rosewood. There's been no shortage of planning and discussions. We are anticipating a closing in late summer, hopefully by August of this year. And so, we're continuing to work with the historic preservation folks at the state to complete what's called a memorandum of agreement, acknowledging that, yes, Rosewood Court is a historic property, and demolition of 17 of the buildings is an adverse effect. So we do have certain mitigation plans in place to, lessen the blow, and that's through an interpretive approach through the recreation of the Emancipation Park space and also Welcome Center, and also looking at having some historic markers and kiosks to help tell the story of the property as well as the original Emancipation Park. And just working very, very closely with folks from the city of Austin as they are wanting to expand some scope in terms of underground drainage over at Rosewood. But it's gone a bit beyond Rosewood and also the neighboring community, and so we just need to make sure that the city is going to help us to offset the cost of those additional improvements. So that will include some community facilities agreements that need to be approved by City Council, among other things. So this one is definitely a unique project that has probably every type of complexity that you can think of. So it's been fun and definitely not boring. So very appreciative to Ann and Angie and Tiffany and the rest of the team that have been very, very hands-on with, and Sarah. I'm not sure if Sarah's here, but yeah, Sarah Scott with Coast Rose has definitely been very, very helpful to make sure that our legal interests are protected along the way.
Thanks, Sylvia.
The Resident Association for Rosewood, how have they been involved in this process?
They have been involved since day one, from our planning days with the Choice Neighborhoods Grant, and they continue to stay plugged in. They have been very involved with the Section 106 historic preservation process, and they will be invited to be a signatory to that memorandum of agreement.
Yes.
They have also helped to just drum up additional input as we've provided finish options, for example, as part of the new construction. And they will also be helpful in providing input on playscape options for the kiddos. And so we continue to stay very closely connected with our Western Council leaders for their input.
So when you demolish the parts of your hospital, is that all stucco?
It's actually brick. Yes. The buildings are made of brick, as Rose reports them. There has been some, you know, stucco that's been added, or, you know, definitely layers of paint from over the decades, but it's actually brick.
Did you reuse that brick before?
What we are exploring are ways to repurpose some of those bricks for perhaps pavers, and also to delineate the actual original boundaries of Emancipation Park. So we'll lean on our architect team to find ways to repurpose those bricks in ways that can, again, sort of honor the history of the original site of Emancipation Park.
When we read it at the Capitol, you could buy bricks and put your family's name on them, and then part of the pavement might be something to consider, like a little extra money.
We could have definitely used some extra money. Absolutely. Great idea.
Yeah, that Emancipation Park is going to be very interesting to see how that all comes together. And so, yeah, we'd really welcome the historic preservation idea. Commissioner, so I'm sorry I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, it's okay. It has nothing to do with Roseland. I'm sorry. I was going to ask me to update from the Senate and the Congress.
Actually, I'm wondering if perhaps, Leilani, have you been plugged in with Congress and CAC?
Yes, we have, I have been involved with the United Healthcare Catalyst. We meet every month. And so we already have a community health worker cohort that's starting, and they're going to start probably around March. You'll see a lot more activity because now for the first time we're going to have the Brain Health Home from Awesome Pathways meet with the United Healthcare's community health workers. And with that, there'll be outreach that's going to be starting. So just stay tuned for that. While we've had those conversations, we're already in the process of creating the flyers and the pitch.
So, if you be involved, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, you know, maybe like I had, you know, asked earlier.
So Anthony will be contacting you next week. I already asked him to do that.
All right.
And additionally, Family Elder Care will also start in person outdoor, like yoga classes, like Chalmers East and South in March.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's exciting. So, well,
any other questions?
Sorry. Anything else related to Rosewood that folks want to talk about? Thank you, Sylvia. Thanks for your leadership. I wanted to mention two other issues. One dealing with Chalmers. Last night we did have gunfire at Chalmers. We don't know the full extent of it, but apparently last night after midnight, Commissioner Absolo heard it. We received word from a number of residents about it, so it's very disconcerting to us. And it's part of it. It didn't happen on the property. It happened, I gather, on the street there, but between Chalmers South and the new construction site. And so our on that north side of Chalmers South, if you will, on Third Street. So we continue to be concerned about security at the properties, and it's a reflection of cuts at APD. We are going to be bringing to you when we do the board next month, when we do the budget, we'll be bringing to you a recommendation to probably look at hiring some officers, former officers, who can help us address security issues. One would probably bring some deep experience in working with residents on apartment resident on watch-like programs and neighborhood watch-like programs. And someone who's well known to HACA, having had experiences with us in the past, serving as liaison, doing some other things. The other that we're looking at is someone who brings some experience in, both have long histories with APD, but the other would bring in some a depth of experience in areas of surveillance and in thinking about how we do electronic cameras and camera positioning and landscape changes and creating a safer environment. So the things they do are complementary. At their core, both the folks that we're looking at are police officers on the beat. So they we want them to be in relationship with residents, getting to know residents, helping to make the property safer, knowing who should be there and maybe who shouldn't be, and try to create an enhanced presence. And because they're former APD officers, we believe that they will have we're advised by APD that we will have, some ability to have a continuing partnership with APD, hopefully, going forward. you know, APD had to step back from their partnership with the police, with HACA that we've had for 25 years because of cutbacks. This will hopefully be, you know, by having two former officers who just retired, that we'd be able to hopefully see those linkages at least maintained, having, again, two former, you know, non-commissioned, commissioned officers. So things to look forward to when we take up the budget discussion, but we're very concerned about, you know, increases of crime in the city, and our properties are not exempt from that. And so we, you know, we'll be talking to our partners at Carlson and throughout the portfolio today about making sure that we're reporting and doing what we can to try to create a safe environment, particularly there at Chalmers. And so I want to just acknowledge that it happened and that we're aware of it and concerned about it. Last thing in that same vein, budgets coming to you all for security, budgets are going to come to you all for everything next month. And we're working very hard on the budgets, and Barbara Chen has done a great job thoroughly frustrating everybody on staff by asking lots and lots of nitpicky detailed questions and shoring up our confidence in our numbers and making important corrections and changes and fixes where necessary so that we have greater transparency and accountability. So I want you all to the next meeting will probably for real ask you all to come early and have a budget conversation for an hour and a half and pull the budget committee together. So that we can then go and you know, come to the full board and but give you all a good opportunity to talk about the budget. And if anyone has any would like a more detailed briefing during that week between the time we complete the budget and the board meeting, Barbara and I would be very glad to meet you and walk through that with you. And different people at different points have wanted that, and we're happy to meet you and either welcome you here or do it somewhere off-site, but because we think it's important that you know what the numbers are, where the money comes from, and where the money goes. And so I want to give you the heads up that that will be at the next board meeting. Last thing for real, at the last board meeting in December, I told you all we would want to brief you all about Lakeside, and we didn't obviously do that today. So the update is that we are continuing to talk to Austin Transit Partnership and to others involved in trying to understand what's going on at Lakeside. I can tell you that we've had some conversations with the city, and our Lakeside residents and their protection is really a high priority for them. Sylvia and I talked to the mayor about Lakeside. We've had a number of good conversations. I think were you on the call? Okay, I thought I'd come here for you or Lisa. Well, we were on the, we talked to him about it. We've talked to some different city council members. So it's on their radar screen, protecting our residents, and the bridge is not going to be built anytime soon. It's years away. So we've got a little bit of time and to work through that and to see if we can move that ball a little further on the staff level before it comes to you all. There's no decision for you all to make, but I think I think we could take some of the concern out of it if we do our work and talk to the right folks. So I ask your indulgence to give us a little bit more time. We'll come back to you with a little more concrete picture of what it is. But that's all I've got for today. I thank you all for joining. Yes, ma'am.
My bad, probably, but the March board meeting is on the 17th,
Thursday the
17th. It is.
I'm
going to
put it on my calendar.
It's
the
24th, Commissioner. Oh, is that
because
of spring break?
It's also because of it's our annual meeting. And
I won't lie in here. I'll be in a boat.
Sorry. They've got satellite phones.
I guess we better have a meeting on the budget. Huh?
We'll brief you.
We'll
yes, sir. We'll brief you beforehand. Okay. That's good to know. We did move. You all approved the 1 week off in March because we tried to do it off the spring break week because a lot of staff were.
Right.
So.
All right.
So it'll be on the 24th. Are there any other questions from commissioners? Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
All right, I'll entertain a motion to close the meeting.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye.